The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's up, guys? It's Harrison Phillips here, and you're listening to Nate and the Fellows on the Circle the Wagons podcast on Buffalo Rumblings Podcast Network. Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills. Go Bills, baby.
Welcome to the Circling the Wagons podcast, a podcast discussing the Bills all year round with interviews, news, recaps, and insightful fan discussion. Here's your host and lifelong Bills fan, Nate.
Hey Bills fans, welcome to another episode of Circling the Wagons, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I am your host, Nate. Thank you so much for joining us. In this episode, we were able to talk to two of the lead draft writers from BuffaloRumblings.com. You see their articles all off season throughout the entire season, college football season, and I'm talking with Dan Lavoie and Griff. I don't know if you caught last season's recap of the draft in 2020, but I was fortunate enough to talk with Dan Lavoie last season. He had some great insight over the draft picks that the Bills had then. And in this episode, I was able to get both Dan Lavoie and Griff on at the same time to pick their brain on everything and anything, including some general questions about the draft, needs going into the draft for the Bills, where's the draft deep and thin. Then we talk about team trade up or team trade down strategy. Would you draft an RB, a running back, at number 30? We talk about offensive line. We talk about big nickel, one tech, defensive tackles, tight end. We go into a ton of different items in this podcast, and Dan and Griff gave some really thoughtful insight. So without further ado, BuffaloRumblings.com draft writers Dan Lavoie and Griff. So they are the Buffalo Rumblings Draft Brain Trust at BuffaloRumblings.com, and they bring you all of the great draft and free agency content this entire offseason. I'm joined by Dan Lavoie and Griff. Guys, it is so good to talk to you. How are you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, good. Just preparing for the draft, getting ready for it.
Yeah, it's exciting to have you guys on. So let's talk about, since this kind of goes into free agency, I know you've been writing a lot about free agency, Dan, with everything going on. I'll start with you and then I'll head over to Griff, but going into, the offseason, the Bills obviously, filled a lot of needs, as Brandon Bean tends to do. Luckily, he doesn't leave this one glaring need that the Bills absolutely need to draft in the first round. I mean, in your opinion, through what you've been writing, what you've seen from the Bills offseason, what do you have as the Bills' biggest need or needs going into the draft?
I'd say there's definitely a top tier with two positions that stand out to me. Number one for me is cornerback. The Bills do have Levi Wallace in place as kind of their secondary starter there. Taron Johnson in at the nickel. And they've got Dane Jackson, who the team really likes, coming into his second year. But there's no really solid starter here and hasn't been for a few years. So I think there's room to draft a starter at cornerback. And then edge rusher is the other one. where they have a decent rotation going with Jerry Hughes, Mario Addison, AJ Epenesa coming into his second year. But again, there's not really like a really strong starter that they can count on for future seasons. So I think those are your top two needs going into the draft.
Griff, what about you? Do you see the same needs?
I definitely concur with Dan, although I would add as a third need an interior offensive lineman. You know, they have they just signed Feliciano. They still have Mitch Morse, at least for one more year. So they do have their starters from last year all in place, and Cody Ford as well. But I think there is a more slightly longer term need for a long term starter along the interior of the offensive line, whether that's center or guard.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of Brandon Bean is the positions that you just mentioned, that you both mentioned, are all positions that they could absolutely take an upgrade at, but they don't have a huge hole at for either of those. But they definitely need to think long term. And that's kind of where I'll start off with the actual general draft discussion is, and I'll start with you this time, Griff. Where do you see this year's 2021 draft class? Which positions do you see it being deep in, and which positions do you see it being thin in?
So I think it's the strength of the draft really is in three key positions. And, you know, I think it's not surprising to anyone who watches the draft or college football that wide receiver is one of the deepest positions. You know, there's probably, it's going to be another season where maybe five or six wide receivers get drafted in the first round, maybe more. That's everyone from, you know, most likely first round, first pick in the draft to be, Jamar Chase, maybe in the top five, maybe in the top 10, all the way down to the end of the first round to, some of the lesser known players, who we'll maybe talk about later. So wide receivers deep, fantastically deep, all different kinds of receivers, you know, different body types, speed guys, you know, size guys, all different kinds of receivers. Then the next group is offensive tackles. I think this group in particular has maybe four or five first round tackles, and that's just the first round. The second round too is chock full of options that, you know, from smaller schools or guys, you know, that are maybe only good on the right side, like Christian Darrisaw from Virginia Tech, that, you know, could be drafted in the second round and potentially start either on the left or right side. So that's definitely a consideration. Then cornerback. As well, fantastically deep in this draft. You know, there's going to be possibly six or seven first round corners, similar to receivers, all different kinds, tall corners, corners that are better in zone, corners that are better in man. I think those three positions are definitely the deepest. In terms of weakness, it's not a particularly high end edge class. You know, there's no Chase Young this year. There's no elite guy that you can point to and say, hey, that guy is going to walk in and be the best pass rusher on his team the first day, be the best pass, one of the best pass rushers in the NFL as soon as he steps onto the field. You know, it's just not that type of draft, in terms of edge players. And especially there's a lot of similar body type edge players. You know, if this is the year your team's looking, and you're a 3-4 team and you're looking for a 3-4 outside linebacker that's an edge rusher, this is not the draft for you. There's lots, much more 4-3 edge rushers in this draft class, particularly. Tight end is another weak class, I would say. There, you know, outside of Kyle Pitts out of Miami, or I'm sorry, outside of Florida, there's really, you know, not an elite tight end that you can point to that really deserves to go in the first round, to be honest. You know, there's a couple guys that we may end up talking about that have some potential in the middle rounds. You know, some kind of well-rounded guys that have, you know, are good at blocking and receiving, but there's not really any elite pass catchers in this draft, you know, that have all the athletic qualities that you want in a modern day tight end. And then the last weak class of position groups is defensive tackle. There's really, you know, there's no elite defensive tackle this year. There's some guys, you know, some more, three tech guys that are smaller, quicker, that have some intriguing athletic traits, you know, in terms of, you know, quickness and speed on the inside, but there's no elite, you know, one tech defensive tackle. There's no, defensive tackles that could play both positions, you know, both techs simultaneously and very well. You know, maybe there might only be one or two that go in the first round at all. So
Dan, so first off, do you have anything to add as far as like strengths or weaknesses? And secondly, if you're Brandon Bean and you've probably run through some mock draft scenarios, obviously, and looking at certain areas and positions of need, when you run through these areas, which positions are you seeing a lot of and that are really tough to pass up on, including needs that you mentioned earlier? And just in general, you see this player like, man, there's a lot of edges or there's a lot of corners or something like that when you're going through your different mock draft scenarios.
Yeah, I'm definitely with Griff overall on the strengths and weaknesses of this class. For me, it's very top heavy for quarterbacks. It's very top heavy it's just top to bottom, an excellent cornerback class. So the pass defenders are outstanding. Wide receiver talent, there's some truly awesome players that are going to be picked in the first round and just excel right out of the bat. So when I think about how the Bills would approach this, a couple of the general trends that stand out to me are that the need for some of these higher end offensive players, the quarterbacks, the receivers, the tackles, those are pushing some defensive talent down the board in the first round. And you'll find a scenario where you'll find a very good cornerback who you could take in the first round, 30th overall. You'll find a very good edge rusher, potentially the first or second edge rusher off the board, could come in the 30th overall pick. I also think that there are opportunities when thinking about offensive linemen for the Bills to look into that in the second or third round of the draft. I think you always see a little bit of that reset of the board in day two. You know, the team that picks the quarterback, they're going to want to pair him up with either a blocker or a receiver in round two. So I think there's going to be a decent number of tackles and guards who escape round one. And it's going to be hard to see kind of how many fall all the way down to where the Bills are picking, you know, 62, 63, whatever. But I do think still that there's opportunities to draft your future starter at right tackle or your future starter at guard or center in round two.
Is that kind of how you see the board lining up, Griff, with what you've seen in different scenarios that you've looked at?
Yeah, definitely agree. I think, you know, the first round it's always a wild card. It's always who's going to drop to 30. You know, this is something the Bills haven't really dealt with in years and years and years. But that's the end of the draft, is saying which elite, quote unquote, elite prospect, which, you know, prospect deserving of a, let's say, top 20 pick is going to fall out of the top 20 into your lap. And that potentially, I agree with Dan that, you know, cornerback could be that type of fall. One of these top six corners, which are all really good, may end up falling to exactly where the Bills pick and maybe the team jumps on it. You know, based on their free agency moves, that could definitely happen. Obviously, they didn't pick up any free agents at corner and only re-signed Levi Wallace. Another position that might fall, like that Dan mentioned, is edge, and for an opposite reason. It's that the class isn't elite at the top. There's not six edge guys that are going to go in the first round. So if an edge does fall, it may be the second or third or fourth best guy in the edge class. So I could definitely, in the scenarios that play out whenever I run, you know, these mock draft scenarios or some of the mock draft, applications that are available, that always tends to happen is that it's an elite prospect at either edge, corner, or tackle.
So I'll ask you, since you mentioned, players falling, and when I think of the top cornerbacks, you know, one of these guys falling, and you know, Brandon Bean has his eye on a certain specific player usually, and he'll jump up to get him if he thinks so or if the price is right. Can you, and I'll start with you, Griff, can you see this being a scenario where Brandon Bean actually does trade up maybe a few spots, maybe 10 spots, who knows, and maybe gives up a draft pick this year or two draft picks this year, or maybe a draft pick this year and next year? Or could you see a potential where Bean just trades down actually because it's so deep, and maybe out of these six or seven corners or this not so elite edge class, but deep in like this round one, round two area, maybe he trades down and you know, picks up some picks, which, by the way, he's never traded down ever. That is something he's never done with the Buffalo Bills or with the Carolina Panthers when he was an assistant GM. I mean, when you look at this, do you see either one of those scenarios potentially happening?
And this is where, you know, I tend to, if you ask me what I would do, I would absolutely consider a trade down for that very reason, is that you say, you know, both the edge, the needs, your needs, your team's needs for this class are deep. So it makes it worth trading down, maybe even out of the first round, obviously, to be able to take advantage of that and add more picks. Because even though the team has its full slate, a full amount of picks, they're not all the same picks. They don't have a fourth round. They have an extra fifth rounder. So that's, you know, that would definitely be a consideration for me. But in terms of Bean's history and going off what Bean tends to do, he tends to trade up. He tends to stay where he is. And I think probably I would have to say that staying where he is the more likely scenario. Getting up just doesn't make a lot of sense in terms of how much it will cost. It's either going to cost them a high pick next year or one of their very valuable picks this year. I don't think it's something that Bean's going to want to do. He's going to want to continue to stock up his roster in the coming years. I don't think he's going to want to give up a pick next year. So if I had to guess, I would say the most likely scenario is that the team stays put and then just takes the best player available at a position of need. Mm-hmm.
So Dan, same question to you. Are you team trade up or team trade down? And then what would you see potentially Brandon Bean doing at that position?
I'm always kind of enamored with Bean's philosophy that you identify the player and you go get the player. It's not really about like the value of the pick itself. So like asking trade up or trade down, for me, it always comes down to the hypothetical scenario of who's on the board. I've gone through the list of players and I've identified like my rough cutoff point where I would say, if all these players are gone, I'd like to trade down because the next 20 are roughly the same to me. So if it gets to that point, I would like to see the Bills trade down. I can also see a scenario where some guy that is just exactly who they're looking for is there with, you know, pick number 20 or pick number 25. And like Bean will do that. He'll go for it. I mean, we do have to be realistic about what the Bills can obtain with their ammunition that they have. Picking as low as they do in the draft this year, which is nice. But it does mean that they're limited probably to no higher than like the 15th or 16th overall pick. Getting up to there would require a pretty hefty sum to begin with. And going higher than that is probably out of the question. Mm-hmm.
So I have to ask you this. If it comes down to it and one of the best running backs is on the board at number 30, which is always a fun topic with Bills Mafia. It feels like it's so divisive. It feels like politics sometimes, whereas you're either pro running back in the first round or anti running back in the first round. You know, where do you guys each stand on this? I know how I stand on this. Dan, I'll go right back to you. Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, either one of those guys is on the board. And maybe you're in a scenario where all those guys that you mentioned are gone. They're off the board, and you could either trade down or draft the running back. I mean, what would you do in this scenario? Or would you even consider even before trading down? Like, this is, I would never consider trading down if one of those two guys is on the board.
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot. I, at one point, back in like November, I was on the ETN train, and I was like, you know what? Screw it. All they need is one more offensive playmaker, and we're golden. Like I go back and forth on this. At the end of the day, with the roster where it's at and where there's enough players kind of signed to effectively 1 year deals to keep us going over the line, I'm not interested in getting like a running back at, certainly not with the top pick, probably not at all. Give me a trade down in that scenario and I'll go recoup the value with a couple second rounders later.
Mm-hmm. Griff, same question. Are you would you take a running back at that position or no?
I would not. Similar to Dan, I've thought about this a lot, and you know, what I struggle with is what is the identity of the team right now? And it's a passing team. So, I'm not saying that a fantastic, you know, running back who can be a weapon in the passing game isn't worth it, like Etienne, like Harris actually as well. But they're not going to be the focus of the offense. The focus of the offense is the Josh Allen, the Stephon Diggs, and Cole Beasley connection. And the opportunity for a first round running back is just not going to be there in terms of touches. And I don't care how involved they're going to be. The team has so many weapons that at best, they're going to be the second or third best option for the offense. And the, you know, that just doesn't make sense in terms of who you're picking in the first round. You know, if you wanted a dynamic, explosive running back, you don't need to pick Travis Etienne in the first round. There's plenty of guys that can fill that role later in the draft that you can also work into the offense that don't carry the same expectation that they're going to be, you know, these elite talents and need to see this many touches in the offense. So if that scenario were to happen to me, I'm definitely a trade down person.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with both of you. I was kind of hoping one of you would say running back so we could have a little bit of an argument or discussion about it, but they just brought it up on the Hump Day Hotline podcast a few days ago. And I have to agree with, let me know what you guys think of this, because as far as being a fan and watching the games and seeing what goes on, it would be this is 100% a passing offense. Like you said, Griff, it goes in and out through Josh Allen. The only thing that I would like to add to it is the ability to run when we have to. And then you kind of have to, you know, look, you know, introspectively, is the reason why we can't run because your running backs aren't good enough. And I don't think that's the case. I see Zach Moss and Devin Singletary as solid running backs. I don't think that they are Travis Etienne or Najee Harris. But I mentioned last week on a podcast, I was looking at the highlights of these guys, and when they're ripping off 20, 40, 60-yard runs, they're not dealing with the same issues that Devin Singletary and Zach Moss are, where they have to make a missed tackle in the backfield right before they can even get to the line of scrimmage. Whereas how many times have we seen that this year? So I would put, and I was just watching a video on Cover One earlier today where they had, they broke down the issues with the run game, and they kind of gave it this percentage wise. You guys let me know if you think it's around similar. They say the issues with the run game were 60% offensive line, 20% coaching and scheme, and then 20% running backs. So if you were to just take that at face value, my opinion is if you get a chance, upgrade the offensive line so that you optimize the two third round picks that you've taken in, you know, consecutive years, and optimize the running game that way, as opposed to let's bring in this shiny new toy. Let's do it that way. And sure, he's great. But I mean, you know, if you don't have good blocking in front of you, I mean, are Travis Etienne and Najee Harris still the amazing running backs that they are in that? I mean, I guess I'll start with you, Dan. What do you think when it comes to that? Or do you think I'm way off on that assumption?
I mean, for me, the reason that ETN appeals to me in particular is it's his speed element. As much as I want to like Devin Singletary and Zach Moss and what they bring to the offense, the thing that they don't have is that game breaking speed that can have, you know, a 60 or an 80 yard run. I also think that the Bills have kind of boxed themselves into a coaching, like really like a team building challenge now by re-signing all the players that they did. Because it'd be one thing if they left out a right tackle and they didn't re-sign Darrell Williams or they didn't re-sign John Feliciano. And then it's clear to everybody involved that open competition, let's go. You can draft that guy and bring in the rookie and say, here's your chance to start. Looking at it now, though, you have two players who were the unquestioned starter last year, and they're coming back in. And do you bring in a rookie and say, no, now you're in an open competition? I mean, you can, but this is the kind of thing that the players and the coaches would have to, you know, coordinate and work out as a team to figure out, like, how do we send the right message and bring the most competitive team that we have? So when I'm looking at, like, do you draft the running back or do you draft the offensive line? I completely agree. Tactically, go with the blocking upgrade because you're going to improve your running game. You're going to improve your passing game by doing that. But it's not so simple as putting a square peg into a square hole with the Bills because of that human element. And that's where I think, like, bringing in the running back is kind of an easier sell because the only guy he'd be competing with is Matt Breida, and he's on, you know, a cheap 1-year contract.
What do you think, Griff?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think to your point, Nate. I think just because you don't draft ETN doesn't mean you can't upgrade and get that skill set that you want in terms that Dan's talking about in terms of a game breaker. You know, you could go in the fourth round and draft Javion Hawkins from Louisville to get that type of explosive, you know, pass catcher, you know, scat back kind of player. So definitely not drafting one in the first round doesn't preclude you from that. Second of all, I think Dan, I like Dan's point about the human element here, but you can't tell me that a rookie second round pick guard isn't going to come in and beat out John Feliciano or Cody Ford. And the team's going to be like, nah, we're going with Cody Ford. He was here first. This is the team that brought in Daryl Williams on a 1-year contract on a just, you know, take a chance contract, beat out Cody Ford, the team's previous second round pick, and they had to move him to guard. So, I mean, I even if it's John Feliciano, who, you know, Josh Allen clearly loves, the guy's on a short term deal. You know, I think the coaches understand that, you know, they're willing to make those hard choices in order to just improve the team, whether that affects, you know, a well-respected veteran or not.
So you mentioned the speed element, and I'm glad you got to that because we haven't talked at all about wide receivers, specifically as far as them potentially being a first-round pick, which I haven't seen anywhere. And I don't think that they necessarily would pick one in the first round. But I guess in your opinion, like, I'll start off with you, Griff, like, what are some traits that you could see the Bills taking if they take a receiver on day one or day two? Are they looking for speed only? Are they looking for size and speed? Are they any combination of the two? Are they looking slot? Is it a slot receiver potentially to replace Cole Beasley in the long term? Is it another receiver outside to compete with Emmanuel Sanders or, you know, Gabe Davis and, you know, potentially become that wide receiver number two? I guess, where do you see that, and what players do you see fit the mold that you like coming out in this draft?
So I think it's kind of a little bit all of the above. You know, Emmanuel Sanders, first of all, doesn't have the same skill set as John Brown does. So it's not an exact fit there, even though, you know, they're both very good players. And obviously he's only on a 1-year deal. So I think you're looking for, you know, long-term replacement there. In terms, you know, of John Brown's old role and Emmanuel Sanders' new role. But is there an immediate need? Not necessarily. And I don't think Gabe Davis satisfies that particular need. I think actually Cover One had a great YouTube video where I broke down some of what Gabe Davis does in the offense. And it's, long story short, it's different things than John Brown does. It's a little bit more, you know, big slot. It's a little bit more blocking, you know, from the slot, a little more crackback blocks. So I think, you know, what's the team looking for? I think they are looking for that kind of like John Brown explosive element, you know, not just someone who's going to run, you know, 9 routes all day, but someone who can actually threaten defenses deep and, you know, do comeback routes, do short curls and create immediate separation thanks to their speed and threaten defenses deep. Slot is definitely in need of consideration because the team does not have, you know, a capable replacement for, Cole Beasley either. So I think that's certainly a need too. And, certainly long term. And then I think, Isaiah McKenzie's role as a gadget player, he's only on a 1-year deal. The thing about Isaiah McKenzie is, yeah, he's a gadget player, but he can return punts. But the team doesn't necessarily trust him to do those things regularly, either kick return or punt return. So as maybe the draft proceeds, I could see a situation where, you know, maybe the team says to itself, hey, we can amalgamate a couple of our roles that we currently have in the offense. We can draft a player that's Isaiah McKenzie and John Brown by just drafting one player that can do both of those things. We can draft a guy that threatens, you know, defenses deep and also can return punts and kicks. So I look at a guy, you know, in the middle rounds, that can fulfill that kind of role is Dwayne Eskridge out of Western Michigan. Guy that, you know, just coming from a smaller school, obviously, but he's a guy that, did kick returns for Western Michigan and, has a couple of those, you know, isn't just a deep threat, isn't just a guy who's gonna run 9 routes and run deep down the field on crossers. He has a relatively well-developed route tree. And that's a guy I think I would peg. You know, he has some negatives, obviously, and that's why he's going to go in the middle rounds. For example, he's already 24, so he's a bit of an older prospect, but he's a wide receiver in the middle rounds that I would see that I could see the team targeting as kind of like a future, replacement for John Brown or replacement for Emmanuel Sanders. You know, if you want to go for value, in the middle rounds.
Dan, same question. Do you see the Bills targeting wide receiver early, or in which you know, prospects do you like to fit the Bills scheme? And yeah, any insight that you have on that?
Yeah, I totally buy Griff's theory of distilling down the multiple roles that the Bills have in their receivers on their offense and trying to combine those into one guy. So you're looking at, can we find a player who has the speed that threatens a defense, forces the corners to play off coverage? Do you have a guy who's crafty in the slot and can work his way open, who can take the jet sweep or punt return or whatever? So there are a few players who I could easily see being a first or second round pick that fit the mold. And if the Bills are comfortable like committing to that offensive weapon, then we're talking about a guy like Kadarius Toney out of Florida is the classic do everything threat that could easily distill John Brown and Isaiah McKenzie into a singular role. Another possibility for this like speed threat is Rondale Moore. He's one of the fastest players in college football, came out of Purdue, and he's had some injury issues that I think are going to have him dropping into round two or even three. But again, this is a guy who's like a freak athlete, and would easily be the fastest player on the Bills and be able to do that jet sweep role or work on the outside. So I think it's a totally viable strategy to go for, even with the players already on the roster. So I'm kind of curious to see how they play that out, because I think it's a definite possibility.
Well, with a player like Kadarius Toney or any player, I mean, you mentioned Dwayne Eskridge earlier, Griffin. Any of these players could potentially overtake Isaiah McKenzie on the roster, take his roster spot because of the deal that he made with the Bills. It was such a low risk deal. I think it was only like $350,000 in dead cap or something like that in a 1 year deal. So I could definitely see that. Part of me thinks that if they're going to draft a wide receiver, I feel like they're going to value versatility and potentially, especially if it's in the mid rounds, like a kick returner, punt returner as well. For some reason, I get that feeling, just like I get the feeling that if they do go offensive line in the first or second round, that player will not just be a right guard or anything. Like, he'll either have right guard, left guard versatility, or right guard, center versatility, or right tackle, left tackle, or, you know, swing tackle, or right guard, right tackle, like a Cody Ford or something like that. That seems to be what they really value in a lot of their players in general. So speaking of like versatility, there's a position that's out there that gets talked about a lot. It was talked about so much more last draft than it was this draft, and it's the big nickel position. And the first question I have for you guys, I'll start off with you, Dan. As far as the big nickel goes, the Bills were like second worst in the league in giving up receiving yardage to tight ends. Like, they were awful. They played really good tight ends in their defense, but they also dealt with injuries to Matt Milano and Tremaine Edmonds all season. There were just a lot of issues the Bills had. And that's kind of the position I feel like that Brandon Bean has mentioned, that a lot of, you know, pundits have mentioned, for the big nickel, the Buffalo nickel, whatever you want to call it. And I'm wondering if you think at any point in the draft, you think the Bills might look at a player like this? And if so, I always wonder, do you look at a cornerback, a big cornerback to fill this role? Do you look at a safety to fill this role? Or do you look at like a good, maybe not undersized linebacker, but one that's closer to a DB size as far as that goes? Or, I mean, what do you look for? Do you think they'll target it? And then if so, what do you look for?
Looking at options in the NFL draft, I think the main guy that everybody knows is Hamza Nasruddin, 6'3", 215 pounder out of Florida State. He has the athletic ability to be that nickel defender, but he can also play as a role as a safety. He can be down in the box or play up top. So there's a lot of appeal for him as your hybrid defender. Outside of him, I think thinking about cornerbacks, any of the guys that are 6'1", 6'2", with a little size, that's who you want to target for this nickel position. I like the guys out of Syracuse, Ifeanyi Melifonwu, Trill Williams. Both of those guys have real athleticism and they have length, and that could really work out in the slot for the Bills.
So, you know, I think to your question, it's less position and it's more athletic ability and, you know, body type. So I would refrain from saying, oh, are you going to go with a corner? Are you going to go with a safety? I think it's whichever player has, you know, the athletic ability to run with tight ends and the size to run with tight ends and the athletic ability to run with slot receivers. So, you know, when we talk about body type, I think, you know, yeah, you can have a big guy. You can have a guy that's 6'3", but you know, a guy that's 6'1" is perfectly reasonable. So I looked at Cincinnati safety, James Wiggins, as a guy who has, you know, enough athletic talent, enough size. He's 6'2", enough size to run with tight ends. And, you know, he's a safety, but he definitely has the speed, you know, of a corner. He's a guy that has the instincts and, you know, the man coverage ability definitely to run with tight ends. And, you know, if the team's sitting in round, you know, 3 or 4 and looking for a guy, he's definitely one. I think another one that gets brought up a lot is, Tyree Gillespie out of Missouri. He's only 6 foot. You know, he's not a guy that's super tall or super big, but he, is kind of famous for when Missouri played Florida early this season. He actually kind of shut down Kyle Pitts for the entire game to only one short catch. And that's something that no other team in the SEC had done. You know, so I think he's definitely an option if the team's looking. And same situation in the fourth or third or maybe fifth round. Yeah, if he's sticking around, I think it's hard not to pick him in that role.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
You know, one name I've been seeing around mock drafts in the first or second round is Jabril Cox, the linebacker out of LSU. And I know he's a little bit undersized. I believe he's like 220, maybe 230. But everyone's saying how amazing his coverage skills are. So, I mean, first off, do you guys like Jabril Cox to fill any of those roles, maybe big nickel or maybe some depth? And do you even see linebacker as a position that they could take later in the draft?
I look at the roster, and the first thing for me is that they really only have 2 starting linebackers. And so in a way for me, you need fewer bodies in the room to have complete depth. And so I'm not sure there's room for what would effectively be the 5th or 6th guy on the roster there. That's kind of how I frame it. But obviously, like, if you find a difference maker there, like, Matt Milano was a 5th round pick, and that worked out pretty well. So If you find guys who've got, you know, a head full of steam and they have athletic ability, like I'm all for it. Jabril Cox is interesting. Absolutely a like starter caliber size and athletic ability. He could play like middle linebacker. He could play outside linebacker. I'm not really sure he's built for the slot though necessarily. I think he'd be okay being able to be a slot defender, whereas his athleticism is a plus if he's between the tackles. All in all, I think he definitely brings one or two wow plays every game he's in. But at least from the tape that I saw, I was kind of looking to see a little bit more consistency than I did. So I'm not a huge fan of him in particular. I don't know about you, Griff.
Yeah, I remember watching LSU early in the season and flagging him as a player I wanted to watch during the games. I think particularly the one against Mississippi State. And I, you know, there's players that jump out on tape that you're like, oh yeah, that's the guy. I love, you know, sometimes I love just picking a random team to watch on Saturdays and being like, oh, you know, I'm gonna see who's good on this team, who's popping out. That happened to me when I watched Zaven Collins this year, and I was like, who is that
love
guy?
Love Zaven Collins.
and I remember when I was watching LSU, I was like, oh yeah, this you know, their linebacker core is supposed to be pretty good, and no one was really jumping off the screen. And I, you know, hearing about the athletic ability and everything, you know, it definitely shows up on tape and coverage. But, you know, I think similar to Patrick Queen last year, who came out and, you know, was drafted by the Ravens and didn't exactly excel, he started first game on the field, but he didn't actually have a great year. I think part of that is it's the same situation of just, you know, not ready to step on the field first thing and start, maybe, but is a good developmental guy, but will be overdrafted because of the athletic talent.
So we talked big nickel. I want to talk to you guys about one tech, defensive tackle. I think it's one of those positions where we don't really talk about a lot as a potential need for the Buffalo Bills, even though, you know, Starley Tulele, there's an out after this year on his contract, and they wouldn't have to eat as much dead cap. And then behind him, you have Harrison Phillips, who's, you know, not quite proven yet. You just don't have a lot at that position in the future. Vernon Butler is like, this is his last year. And so we're looking long-term for that position. What are some potential guys that you liked or guys that you could see potentially taking that role? And what rounds do you see them going in? I guess I'll start with you, Griff.
So like I said before, it's really not a fantastic draft for a one tech. So a guy that's, you know, going to be a run stopper, from the defensive tackle position. That's going to be lined up, you know, a shade over from the center. You know, there's a couple guys, Marvin Wilson out of Florida State, but, you know, he's not going to go any earlier than maybe the fifth round. There's a defensive tackle for LSU, whose name's escaping me right now. Dan, if you can help me out on that
Tyler
one.
Tyler Shelvin, right?
Yeah,
Tyler
Shelvin. Yep. He's 350, he's 350 pounds, but he's not, you know, so he's a kind of an immovable object, but he's not going to give you anything in terms of pass rush. He's there to get in the way. He's not going to, you know, his burst isn't great off the line. So, there really is not that guy. You know, there's a couple guys out of LSU too, USC that have some kind of hybrid potential, you know, more like a Vernon Butler type. But there's not a guy I would hang my hat on that's, you know, this guy's going to be a first round pick or this guy's going to be a second round pick and could be that role of someone that's going to give you a little bit of pass rush to go with fantastic run stopping ability.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm honest, and I'm the Bills, I don't think I'm just stopping at one tech. I think I'm looking at a three technique too. I mean, so I am still a huge fan of Ed Oliver. I think he had a little bit of a sophomore slump relative to how well his rookie year went, but I still really do like him, and I think this third year is going to be a big one. Either way, the stakes are high. But thing about who else is on the roster besides him, it's Vernon Butler, we just said, is kind of the other guy there, and he's not lighting the world on fire. So the Bills are going to be thinking long and hard about, can we get some kind of an upgrade here, even though the draft doesn't have a lot of great choices. I think probably the best player at the position in the draft is Alabama's Christian Barmore. And he could honestly, he could go like 14th overall, or he could go 30th overall, and neither one would surprise me. It kind of depends on how many teams are valuing the need of get me an athletic defensive lineman. If they don't pick up him kind of in round one, I agree with Griff that the depth drops off pretty quickly, and you're starting to look at like a lot of compromising in the mid rounds. I am kind of a fan of Jay Tufele, one of the defensive tackles from USC. So he's got some hybrid possibilities where he can do one tech or three tech and offer a little pass rush to go with the gap clogging. So there are options, but it's not a great class. So the scouts are going to have to do their homework on this one.
Now, I wanted to give you guys a couple of scenarios that I've run into. I've run into about like 20 to 25 different mock draft scenarios through draftnetwork.com, and completely automated. I did not pick the players, and I wanted to see, you know, which positions the Bills were looking at, which players specifically came up the most. And I wanted your guys' opinion on a couple of these from each round. I only did the three rounds. As you know, with anything, when it, I mean, determining who you would like and who you would like the Bills to draft, or prospects that you liked were a lot easier when the Bills were bad. There was only 10 picks. You need 10 prospects. Like, okay, I got my top 10. And, you know, two or three of those would be quarterbacks, and the Bills never drafted quarterbacks at that point. So I want to give you a couple of names that keep coming up this last week that I've been running these scenarios, and let me know what you guys think. Which one would you choose, and which ones do you like? So first thing, let's look at the first round. By far, edge defender came up the most. And we already mentioned some names, and the top names that come up are Jason Owe, the defensive end out of Penn State, and then Quiddy Pay out of Michigan, which is funny because I don't see Quiddy Pay fall to the Bills that often. But it continues to do that on this mock draft simulator. Griff, I'll start with you. When you look at either of these two players, if either one comes up, which one would you pick? And would you be happy with that pick?
I'm taking Quiddy Pay, if that were to happen. You know, he's not a guy that is a natural, you know, he's not a body type. He's not a body type of a natural edge rusher. He's not going to, you know, necessarily turn the corner, but I think his elite quality is that his lateral agility and just his agility in general is fantastic. And he pairs that with just massive, massive strength, despite only being like 6'2 and 270. So, you know, and he despite that, you know, he's basically the defensive end that the Bills want. They want their defensive ends to be power rushers. He can also give you a little bit of, you know, he's not, like I said, he's not necessarily going to turn the corner, but he can dip his shoulder. He can, he pairs that nicely with some nice long speed, some effort plays. I think he's exactly what the Bills are looking for in terms of an edge rusher. And Away is similar. Similar as a player, he's fantastically athletic. He had a great pro day, just fantastic elite results in terms of an athletic profile. He's a little less experienced than a guy like Quiddy Pay. You know, he only has 2 years of college experience. I think he came out as a redshirt sophomore. So he's not coming in with a lot of experience. He's not coming in with a lot of production either, because he actually didn't have any sacks his last year he was playing. He also opted out this past year. So, but, you know, I can see the qualities with Owe as well. But, you know, I think both players would be fantastic fits for the Bills in terms of just body type and, you know, what the Bills are looking for. But if I had to pick one, it would definitely be Quiddy Pay.
Yeah, if I had to choose between those two, I'm also going Pay. I think Pay is going to probably end up being my top edge rusher in this class. He gives me a lot of like Ziggy Ansah vibes of just that kind of really athletic, but in the trenches sort of way. So he's just going. He's going to win with his hands. He's going to win with his power, and not necessarily turn the tackles upside down, but he has a speed to win off the edge. I think that's probably the top guy, and I'm with Griff in that Owe has all the athletic potential in the world, but like at the start of his career, he's still going to be, you know, a third down pass rush specialist playing here and there until he gets acquainted to things. And I think Pay has the easier path to the field in his rookie season.
So now I'm looking at the second round and the position. First off, real quick, like I mentioned earlier before we started recording, the Draft Network never drafts an offensive lineman for the Bills ever in its simulations. And the one that came up by far the most that was drafted right after the Bills pick, so it was most often available, was Liam Eichenberg, the offensive tackle out of Notre Dame. Obviously, you guys are in love with Quiddy Pay, so I won't say that. But I mean, you have a chance between, you know, Jason Owe or Liam Eichenberg. Do you choose Jason Owe just like the simulator does, or would you have to, you know, potentially think about? I mean, which way do you lean as far as your needs? You know, the Bills' needs better than anyone. You know these guys. Which one would you rather pick?
This is where it gets tough for me because we start falling into the category of like players that I'm not 100% sold on, and this is where I'm starting to call the phones and be like, hey, what are you offering? I like Eichenberg. I think he's got the body build and the athleticism to eventually be a starting left or right tackle in the league, but I'm not sure that the trajectory is going to get there as a rookie. So he's not an easy sell for me. And yeah, thinking about some of the options that would be available to with the interior offensive line at the tail end of the first round, I've often seen Landon Dickerson get talked about, the Alabama offensive lineman, and I get worried about him because of his extensive injury history. So he's not really up there for me either. I really do kind of hold off on thinking about offensive line until round two, based on how I've seen the board going. Yeah, for as much as it matters, looking at somebody's mock draft simulations at the start of April,
which will change completely next week. Next week it'll be all offensive linemen in my simulations.
Exactly.
It's so weird. It's so funny. These players haven't played in like three months, but whatever. Griff, same question for you. I mean, would you take away over an Eichenberg or even a Landon Dickerson?
I would. And that's not necessarily a need decision. That's not necessarily a need thing either. I actually don't like Liam Eichenberg as much in the first round. You know, there's a couple tackles that I would take over him, like Sam Cosmi or Dylan Radunes out of North Dakota. Who, if you saw his Senior Bowl one-on-ones, he just dominated the competition in terms of the edge rushers. And he definitely sold me after I watched that and then watched the actual Senior Bowl game. So yeah, there's a couple tackles I like better than Eichenberg. And really, Eichenberg himself, his athleticism is good, not great. So I don't love his fit, even on the permanent left side guy. I think he makes a lot of sense on the right side. Even from that perspective, I would just prefer away.
Mm-hmm. So in round two, I'm seeing a few different players that seem to come up pretty often. We have Elijah Molden, the cornerback out of Washington, seems to come up the most. And for what I've read and from what I've heard, he's mostly a nickel cornerback, which is a position the Bills could potentially upgrade in over Taron Johnson. You look at Nico Collins, the wide receiver out of Michigan, and Davion Nixon, the defensive tackle out of Iowa. What are your thoughts on and I gave you three names right there, so feel free to have me repeat them. What are your thoughts on those picks? And if it came down to it, obviously we don't know what the Bills take in the first round, but which one of those guys do you like, and which one would you feel most comfortable drafting? I'll start with you, Dan.
Yeah, I definitely go with Davidson, the defensive tackle. Like I said earlier, the Bills could use reinforcements there. And I think he's kind of a relatively solid fit in terms of like a player who's got some upside at a position that you'd need, where you're not necessarily spending a premium pick on it. So that's the kind of thing that I could get used to. With Nico Collins, I'm not really sold on the fit there. We're talking about a 6'4 guy, 215 pounds. He's got plenty of vertical ability as a like deep threat, in that he can run downfield and just leap up there and box out guys. I'm not sold on that being the fit for what the Bills need, though, and what they've been trying to build on their roster. I think they look more for just outright speed and separation guys. And they do have Isaiah Hodgins if they want that height on their team. And then Elijah Molden, I think you're pretty spot on with kind of projecting him as that nickel corner, because he doesn't have the size to really be a fit for most teams on the outside. But I also don't think he really has the size for what the Bills should need. Where we've been talking earlier about how Taron Johnson, some of his struggles are with like not having enough physicality against some of these bigger slot players. So I think it'd be kind of tough to sell me on him as well.
Yeah, I think Molden, I compare a lot to the Honey Badger, and that's, I think that he's going to be a good fit for that role in the NFL, is that hybrid safety corner. You know, leave him in the not that far from the line of scrimmage, but just have him play robber across the field, blind, you know, back up a little, then just pop guys either come from the slot, come from outside, just so we can watch the quarterback, see what the quarterback wants to go with the ball, then just like knock guys out. Because if you watch his tape, it is really, really entertaining how he does that. He, you know, that's his highlights are just full of that type of play, where he just knocks the ball out, causing, you know, forced fumbles or incompletions. So, but like in terms of what the Bills are looking for in terms of a slot corner, I just don't see it. I don't see the size or the quickness from Molden. He's much better in off coverage. You don't want to line it. I don't think you necessarily want to line him up in man coverage. I don't see him as a super great fit there. Nixon, I agree with Dan. That's a solid. If you want reinforcements at 3-tech. He is a guy that has a lot of athletic potential. You know, I think he's just kind of scratching the surface of his potential in that type of role. So he could use, you know, he could use a little bit of seasoning when he first comes into the NFL. And that would be a great, you know, kind of wave player for the Bills. Does the need necessarily, you know, is it a great need for the team? Not necessarily. Is, you know, do you want to, your second round pick to be a guy that needs a little bit of development? Not necessarily. So, I don't love the fit there, but it's, that would be a solid choice. And then, yeah, Nico Collins, I 100% agree with Dan. His skill set overlaps with Gabriel Davis way too much. You know, we basically have his role on offense as a bigger guy, you know, somebody that's going to go up and get it. Now, is Gabe Davis the best player for that role? Not necessarily, but, you know, their overlapping skill set is such that, you know, he wouldn't be my first choice in terms of picking a receiver, especially when considering the class is so deep.
Now, talking about offensive linemen, Dan, this is your round where you're looking at offensive linemen. A couple have come up, and maybe you have more to add, but I see Brady Christensen, the offensive tackle out of BYU, come up pretty often. I see Quinton Miners out of Wisconsin Whitewater, and those are the two guys I'm seeing most often. Do you like any of those guys, and or the other guys you're seeing at that the bottom of the second round when the Bills are picking offensive line wise that you like?
Yeah, I love Quinn Miners. He's like, give him a little time and he will probably end up being a dominant starter for his team someday. You know, we're talking about a Division III player whose claim to fame was like doing his home videos of him with a crop top, like pushing trash cans over and stuff. Went into the Senior Bowl, flat out dominated every defender that he was going up against. he's a guy who could play center or guard, and obviously the Bills could have long-term needs at either position. So this is a kid who's got a ton of strength. He's got mobility. He's like an animal in the trenches. So I'd love to see him picked by the Bills. Round two makes a lot of sense. I also think, again, like you mentioned, like Brady Christensen, sometimes I see like Jalen Mayfield or Alex Leatherwood come into play talking about tackles. I think there's like a sweet spot there that again, if you're looking for a player who doesn't have to start in year one, but will be your swing guy who becomes the starter in year two, or again, can compete to start in year one if they show that they're ready and better than the veteran, like pull the trigger. This is where you do it. So I think there is talent on the board and they could have that opportunity.
Very much knew you'd mention Quinn Meinhardt, Dan. So I knew that was coming, definitely 100%. But I am very surprised you didn't mention Creed Humphrey. The guy has a wrestling background, which I'm sure Sean McDermott is going to love. But he too, you know, center from Oklahoma. He's a guy that, you know, maybe the negative with him is really he's a center only. You know, I don't think he's going to take many snaps at guard, but he's a guy that's going to be there maybe in the second round, that, you know, with a little bit of preparation, and maybe even if he has a good camp, he can walk in and start at center. And, you know, he's not going to walk in and be the best center in the league. He's going to maybe be a top 15 center or something like that. But for the next, you know, 10 years that you're getting in the second round, you know, and like I said, he doesn't have a lot of flexibility in terms of playing guard. But I could see if he's available when the Bills are picking in the second, that's their replacement for Mitch Morse.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think Creed Humphrey is a player. He's even maybe a possibility in round one, depending how the board shakes out, or again, like a trade down situation. But you put him on the Eric Wood plan. You let him kind of work his way from guard into center as the team has openings available. But yeah, I do love him, and I'm looking forward to seeing him play in the NFL.
Now we're getting into round three, which is, you know, I mean, we're talking, you know, 90 something different scenarios where it could happen. I'm just going to give you a few names and let me know what you think about the players that I see drafted most often in that position. And we're looking at Paulson Adebo. I might be pronouncing all these names wrong. I don't know. But Paulson Adebo, the cornerback out of Stanford, I see draft a lot. I see Kenneth Gainwell, the running back out of Memphis, mentioned a lot. And Jordan Smith, the defensive end out of UAB. So, you know, I'll start with you, Griff. Do any of those names jump off to you? Do you like any of them in particular, or any thoughts on those guys in general as potential fits for the Bills?
Adebo is definitely a fit, just for the role, the type of cornerback role that he plays. You know, he's comfortable in off coverage. He's not exactly a corner, you know, that has a lot of size, but he's strong, you know, from the Stanford kind of defense of, you know, you're in off coverage a fair amount. You're watching the quarterback, you know, a lot of zone. So I think he's definitely a fit. You know, the problem with him is that he opted out, I think, this past year. So, you know, there's not a lot of recent tape on him. He also carries some injury problems. So I think it's a bit of a risk, but obviously in the third round, that's the type of risk you take. And that's kind of a sweet spot, to be honest, because he could come in and he has the talent to start over a Levi Wallace. So I think that's definitely a sweet spot. Jordan Smith out of UAB, I really like. I think that might be just a tad too high for him. I could see him being a very solid, very good fourth round pick. But he's also kind of what the Bills are looking for in terms of length. He had a fantastic, in the one-on-ones in the Senior Bowl, he was one of the few, that gave Dylan Radun some trouble. I think Radun's, beat him most of the time, but he was one of the few defensive ends that gave him some trouble. And he's a guy that kind of popped in those drills and you're like, oh yeah, that guy, he has some legitimate talent. He can, you know, immediately threaten offense NFL offensive tackles in a pass rush scenario. So I think, you know, I like him a lot. His problem is that he's got some off field issues in terms of his history. So that's maybe even the third round would be a little bit risky in terms of character issues. But yeah, I like it. I like him a lot as a player.
What about you, Dan? What do you think of
those?
What about Kenneth Gainwell?
We're just not even going to talk about running back because
Gainwell. Oh my God! Yeah.
No. It's okay. It's okay.
Gainwell is great. I mean, you know, he's a home run hitter, and that is what the Bills need at the position, and he's also a fantastic receiver, which is also what the Bills would like to have in the position. So he's definitely an option, but. You know, I think those first two players, just from a need perspective, and the round that you're talking about, that I would prefer. But Gainwell would be a very solid choice as well.
Yeah, part of me just in general has a hard time believing that Bean would take three running backs in consecutive drafts in the third round, or maybe even higher. That going back to our running back conversation, but Dan, I'll get your thoughts on Paulson Adebo, Jordan Smith, and Kenneth Gainwell as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with Gainwell. I totally agree with Griff. He has certainly, we're talking about like NFL starter potential. He has speed, receiving ability, and those are all good things. I just think philosophically, with the Bills in particular, it's kind of round one or not at all. They have running backs otherwise. Paulson Adebo, yeah. Certainly has the potential to become a starting cornerback for the Bills. He has the kind of length that they're looking for, like a smart player all in all. So I think absolutely he would be able to play in their scheme and challenge to start in year one, whether or not he actually gets there. And similarly, as Griff said, Jordan Smith, plenty of potential. He's a great athlete, but he's also got the ability to already win one-on-one, which you love to see. But he was suspended for a whole season because of some involvement with a like criminal-esque thing off the field. So that's where it comes into play of like the coaches and the staff need to talk to him and find out what's the latest, what's he up to, how has he been since he transferred to UAB, and is everything all hunky-dory now? So but you know, if that all checks out, yeah, absolutely. We're talking about a player who could develop into a starter. I also think you didn't mention it, but this is kind of, if the Bills were going to target a tight end, I think round three-ish is like where you would look into this. So, I mean, we got Dawson Knox. We know how he's doing. We have Dawson Knox. So could they add another player? And where would they do that in the draft? I think with round three, you're looking at a couple of possibilities. Tommy Tremble out of Notre Dame is kind of the big boy who's got the size and the bulk, and he can put you on the ground with his blocking. He's got some receiving ability, but he's still kind of learning the position a little. Hunter Long out of Boston College led the nation for tight ends and receiving this year, but he's also... he's not like a freak athlete in the way that Kyle Pitts obviously is far above the rest of the pack. Maybe an upgrade on Tommy Sweeney, who the Bills also drafted out of Boston College in the past. And then Brevin Jordan, if you're looking at like your H-back guy who is maybe a fullback or, you know, a shorter tight end, but faster overall and, you're hoping can get more yards after catch. So Brevin Jordan out of Miami could maybe fit that role as well.
Griff, we haven't even talked about tight ends. What about tight ends on your end? Do you pretty much agree with Dan on those assessment of where to find tight ends and the names he just mentioned?
Yeah, I really like Tommy Tremble. I love any tight end that just blocks enthusiastically because that's something you really never see in college anymore. And, you know, he can put the guys on the ground. And, you know, he's got good straight line speed. And, you know, I think he's 6'3". I think that's what he came out on his pro day at Notre Dame. So he's not the biggest guy. But he's, you know, he's big enough. He can also kind of play that H-back role, that Brevin Jordan can play. Brevin Jordan, I compare a lot, obviously, to his predecessor, Miami, Chris Herndon. He's that kind of like H-back role, more of a receiver, but like kind of bulky. You know, he takes he would take tight end screens, and those are some of his best plays, of just like his straight line speed, being able to take that to the house. I like Brevin Jordan a lot. I don't know, like, you know, I think in terms of the fit, in terms of the Bills, I don't love it, because Dawson Knox kind of also plays a little bit of H-back role. You know, I think if the team is going to add a tight end, it's going to be someone who can block effectively and can, you know, has a decent amount of athleticism, but that's probably their first contrast compared to a guy like Dawson Knox. So a Hunter Long, I think, would make a lot of sense. I think the other name who maybe isn't available in the third round, but Pat Freiermuth out of Penn State, he's kind of a similar situation with Hunter Long. He's not a guy that has a lot of great long speed, but that may keep him from being drafted even in the second round. But same situation. He's just really, really well rounded. So if he's available, I think obviously he would be a consideration too from there.
First and foremost, I want to thank you guys so much for doing this. I know it was a lot of your time. You guys clearly do some really great work over at the site, and breaking down everything. I mean, you guys are putting out so many articles per week, each week of the season, and there's no off season for you guys. So appreciate you guys taking the time out of this that I could really scratch your brain, because I've been talking to a number of different people around the media and everything like this. So I'm glad I finally got a chance to talk to you both at the same time. So where can they find all of your great work on BuffaloRumblings.com, and where can they find you on any social media or any other platform that you promote or do anything with?
So you can find me. Usually I'm decently active on Twitter. I'm at agriff426. I usually post a retweet all my articles there, and are decently active in terms of the NFL draft community. So especially when I'm watching tape or when I'm just watching college football live, I'm pretty active on Twitter. And you can always see my articles on Buffalo Rumblings, and my handle on there is just Griff. And obviously, I focus more towards the draft pretty much 24/7 throughout the year.
And Dan, where can folks find you?
Yeah, you can find me writing articles for BuffaloRumblings.com. And if you want to catch me on Twitter, you can find me at Dan R. Lavoie.
Okay, great. Well, thank you again, guys, for coming on. Appreciate all the insight and going over probably about 100 different names tonight, and probably went over each name probably at one point. But thanks so much for your time, and look forward to following you guys through the draft and seeing what you guys think of what the Bills actually do.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, thanks, Nate. This was fun.
So thanks again to Dan Lavoie and Griff for taking the time and discussing all of those different topics and items and subjects. I'm sure there's a ton of different players that you've probably heard of, and maybe some that you didn't. I just wanted to hear their insight on these guys. They've obviously watched them a lot closer than I have. They've read a lot about them and also looked at the film a lot more closely than I ever have, or than a lot of probably our listeners have. And we actually did a mock draft together too, which I'm going to release before the next episode. So stay tuned for that. So for me, Nate, go Bills. Don't draft a running back in the first round. And we'll talk to you guys again soon.
Yeah. It's the mafia, you know I'm rocking with the Bills. It's the mafia, you know I'm rocking with the Bills. It's the mafia, I'm with the Buffalo Bills. It's the mafia, you know I'm rocking with the Bills. Hey, hey. Who you reppin', what's your team? Who you reppin', what's your team? You know I'm reppin' for my team. I got that talent on my team. Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, can you catch it? Can you? Trade day is like a mask, you're not catching anything. Matt Milano making plays, we not scared of any team. Best in the AFC, all the praise of Brandon Bean. You hear Sean McDermott clapping while I'm snapping? Do you? Jerry Hughes will get the sack soon as you snap it. Yeah. Andre Roberts running back, ain't no just backing. Mafia, we on a ride and we got traction. We got Beasley, we got Diggs. McKenzie make you miss. Dawson Knox with the stiff arm, treat opponents just like his. Feliciano, Deion Dawkins, block defenders like defense. Hey, it's the mafia, I said no one on top of us. I said no one is blocking us on top of our division. So it's clear that it's no stopping us. Google best team in the league and we popping up. Hey.
team? Who you repping? What's your team? You know I'm repping for my team. I got that salad on my team. It's the mafia, you know I'm rocking with the Bills. Yeah. It's the mafia, you know I'm rocking with the Bills. It's the mafia, I'm with the Buffalo Bills. Yeah. It's the mafia, you know I'm rocking with the Bills. Hey, it's the mafia, I said no one on top of us. I said no one is blocking us on top of our division, so it's clear that it's no stopping us. Google best team in the league, and we pop it up. Home game for the playoffs, but you already know. Gabe Davis is a rookie, but he playing like a pro. Going through a table, only time we ever fold. Can you dig it? 17, about to take us to the bowl. Hey, don't you run it?
No.
Oliver and Trey Edmonds gonna be on it.
On it.
We got Corey, but we barely ever punt it.
Never.
Cause we just running up the score on our opponent. We got Beasley, we got Diggs. Singletary, about to juke him out of shoes. Make a miss, run it in. Zach also throw the digs. It's for six. Terry Johnson, pick six. To the house, take a flick. Hey, it's the mafia, you know I'm rocking with the Bills.
Hey.
It's the mafia, you know I'm rocking with the Bills.
Yeah.
It's the mafia, I'm with the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
It's the mafia, you know I'm rocking with the Bills. Hey, hey, hey. Who you reppin'? What's your team?
Hey.
Who you reppin'? What's your team?
Hey.
You know I'm reppin' for my team.
Hey.
I got Josh Allen on my team. It's that Diggs on my team. Super Bowl, what you mean?
Thank you for listening to the Circling the Wagons podcast. Download and subscribe to us in your favorite podcast service. Email us at ctwpod@gmail.com. That's Charlie Tango Whiskey Pod at gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at ctwpod. And most importantly, go Bills!
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills.
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills, mate.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.